It's time now to bring a little relief from all the bad news. By the way, I do remind you that restaurants in Massachusetts are closed. They are offered the opportunity to offer free delivery and curbside service, okay? So it's just closed for seating. That was announced by the Massachusetts governor yesterday. And in Connecticut and Massachusetts, no gatherings of more than 50 people. Those are the latest statewide updates, and it's just a time for everybody to pay attention. But right now, it's time to take a break from this. And like I said, it's time for Arthur Schwartz at the Food Maven. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. And I keep saying I don't have to wash my hands because I'm doing dishes all day.
There you go.
You know, when you cook, your hands are under the water all the time. So there is panic in New York City. I have to say, it seems to be Manhattan-based. I don't see anybody in Brooklyn panicking. Things were relatively normal here yesterday and Saturday. My supermarket had all its shelves full. I didn't even look to see if there was toilet paper because I'm way overstocked on that. And I still don't get why people first thing they do is buy toilet paper. But anyway, you know, and we're staying home and I'm cooking all the time. So I'm very happy that I, one, went to my friend Leah Koenig for dinner a couple of weeks ago before all this got out of control. She has two little kids, so I don't know what's going on over there. I know she's home with them. But Leah wrote a book called The Jewish Cookbook. Got to add, as they the Levi's rye bread ad used to say, you don't have to be Jewish to appreciate this. It's a huge book published by Phaidon, or I think it's pronounced Phaidon, P-H-A-I-D-O-N. And my friend's name is Leah, L-E-A-H, Koenig, K-O-E-N-I-G. Now, even though this is called The Jewish Cookbook, and everything in it, of course, is kosher, meaning it follows the Jewish dietary laws, the food is from all over the world. And you don't have to be Jewish to appreciate, for instance, this exotic meatball and bean stew, which it's North African, Tunisian. It's Tunisian. And, you know, there are Jews all everywhere in the world. So this is really a Tunisian recipe. And Leah made it for us, and I loved it so much I had to make it myself. And even though I don't buy cookbooks these days, rarely, I mean, I think I bought one cookbook in 2019. It was a book on the Caucasus, which didn't come in digital form. And I was going to be going to the Caucasus this spring, but it looks like we're not going. So I bought that book. And this book, I just couldn't resist because everything Leah made was so delicious, I wanted to eat it again, and the only way to do that was either invite myself over or buy the book, and buy the book is more polite. And I made other things as well as this, but this white bean and meatball stew is what she calls it, although in Tunisian, it's called, what is it called? She has the name here, Tifina Pakaila. Now, I don't know the actual word for tifina, but I used to make a Moroccan, that's also North African, tafina. And tafina, to me, always meant, until this recipe came along, the North African version of Eastern European cholent, which is the Sabbath dish. You make it on Friday, and on your way to synagogue on Friday night, because Jewish days start at sundown, on your way to synagogue on Friday night, you would bring your pot of cholent, or tfina, if you lived in North Africa, to the communal oven on your way to synagogue. And the communal oven meaning people in those days didn't necessarily have an oven in their kitchen. So there would be a bread baker nearby in every neighborhood, and you could take your pot to the bread baker, and he would put it in his now-turned-off oven. And it would stay there until the next day, midday, on your way home from synagogue after morning services. You'd pick up your pot and take it home and eat that for lunch. And it's a heavy dish, which is why people nap on the Sabbath. You're not supposed to work, you're not supposed to do this or that. So you eat and you take a, you pray, you eat and you take a nap. This is not that heavy. And it's a little bit of a project because you have to make meatballs and brown them and then make a stew base with, and I thought this was brilliant, Leah uses flanken or short ribs. Flanken is the same as short ribs except it's cut across the bone instead of with the bone. You, either of these, and you buy, of course, in most markets they sell them with the bones. So you cut it off the bones and cut it into small pieces. What I did was I took my flanken, which is a long, flat piece of meat with these several bones, and I cut across the length of the slice, and then I cut it into pieces. Now, there is a little bit more meat on the other side of the bone, so that I just cut off, and I also cut into pieces, even though it's really tiny pieces. But it all worked out very well. So I guess I should give the whole recipe, but there are a lot of it's not that hard. It's just a lot of ingredients go into these meatballs. Let's start with a pound of meat. Now, because this is a kosher cookbook, the meat is beef, although you could use lamb. And in Tunisia, I wouldn't be surprised if they sometimes use lamb. Into that pound of meat, you grate an onion. I do this quite often with meatballs and meatloaf, and I'm never sure how I should grate the onion. This time I grated it on the coarsest side of my box grater. However, I didn't press too hard because I wanted the onion to really be grated, not in little pieces. If you press hard, it comes out in little pieces. So a medium onion grated right into the bowl with the meat, and then a quarter of a cup of dried breadcrumbs. I always have whole wheat breadcrumbs of my own making here. I use those. And here are the seasonings. 1 tablespoon of ground cumin. Now, if you don't like all these spices, this is not a recipe for you. Just say you can't leave one. You can't leave out a tablespoon of cumin. If you anti-cumin, don't make this recipe. 1 tablespoon of ground cumin, 1 teaspoon of smoked paprika. And I always have this in the house. I'm not sure why. I do know why. Somebody gave it to me recently. So lately I've been using it a lot just because it's there and I should use it. For instance, I rub it on chicken thighs, the smoked paprika, salt, pepper, and smoked paprika, and then just stick them in the oven. 1/2 teaspoon of ground coriander, 1/2 teaspoon of ground turmeric. That's one you could leave out, I think. 1/2 teaspoon of onion powder. Now, this is a quirk of Leah Koenig's book. She uses quite a lot of onion powder and garlic powder, not salt, but powder. Now, I haven't used these products in many, many years, and I was rather skeptical about it, but I did go out. I'm still not up to using garlic powder, but I did use onion powder, and they're not inexpensive. I thought, oh, those are going to be inexpensive spices, but they're not. It was the same $5 for a little bottle. Anyway, I did use the onion powder in this, even though it only calls for 1/2 teaspoon of onion powder, and there's a whole onion in there. I did feel it gave it a little bit more onion oomph, which I liked. 2 teaspoons of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of ground pepper, black pepper. I'll repeat the seasonings again. 1 tablespoon of cumin, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1 teaspoon of smoked paprika, 1/2 teaspoon of ground coriander, 1/2 teaspoon of ground turmeric, 1/2 teaspoon of onion powder, and 2 teaspoons of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of pepper. I love when a cookbook tells me exactly how much salt and pepper. I may want to change it the second time I make it, but I don't like to taste because I don't get that. It doesn't give me a guideline about how much. You could say 1 teaspoon or more to taste, or in the case of like hot pepper, I sometimes say, you know, blah, blah, crushed red pepper flakes or less to taste. Anyway, that you put all those ingredients together with two eggs and smush it all up. Leah says to mix it with your hands. I like starting with a fork and then finishing with my hands. And you make tiny meatballs, one-inch meatballs. She says you should get about 35. I got 32, so I did pretty good. 35 meatballs, and then you fry them. You heat some olive oil in a skillet, and working in a couple of batches, gently turning the meatballs really almost as soon as they hit the fat until they're browned on all sides. This whole thing takes about 4 minutes per batch. So in 10 minutes, you've browned all the meatballs. But you don't have to cook them, just brown them. And they brown rather easily. So, and then you, Leah says, put them in the refrigerator. And I suggest you do this because you can make them even a day ahead. And then the rest of it becomes really easy. You take the meat it's a pound and a half of flanken that you've cut into little bits. Well, not little bits. Let's say 1-inch pieces or a little bit bigger. And you brown that in some extra virgin olive oil. And salt and pepper, of course, the meat before you cook it. And then, and that's it, actually. Just leave it at that. And brown the meat and take it out and put it aside. And in the same pot that you brown the meat, saute a large onion, finely chopped. And this is going to sound like a lot. Jill, watch out. 8 large cloves of garlic, also chopped. Believe me, it's not going to be like, garlic when you're finished. It's going to be quite mellow. So you basically are deglazing your pan that you browned the meat in with your onion and garlic. So you're going to have a nice, what they call fond, F-O-N-D, on the bottom of the pot from browning the meat. As soon as you put the onion in there, the moisture from the onion helps to lift that fond off the bottom of the pot. And saute the onions along with the garlic. You don't have to hold back the garlic. Takes about, 6 or 7 minutes maybe to get it slightly tender, slightly softened, maybe 8 minutes. And then you add your meat back and 5 cups of broth. Could be beef broth, could be chicken broth or stock. I used actually boxed beef broth. And the box comes with 4 cups, so I added a cup of water. Believe me, it was strong enough. So altogether, you want 5 cups of liquid. And then you bring this mixture to a simmer and let it simmer very gently for at least an hour. Mine took an hour and 15 minutes until the meat got tender. And you do want to have this meat tender before you continue with the rest of the recipe, which is basically just add the meatballs and let them simmer for 10 minutes to finish their cooking, and their seasoning will give a lot of flavor to the rest of the stew. And Leah tells you to add a can of drained and rinsed beans, white beans, cannellini beans, with the meatballs. But when I do this again, if I do use canned beans, I'm going to add them at the very, very end because I don't like when they fall apart. In the case of adding them with the meatballs, a lot of them dissolved into the sauce. I guess that's also good too because it does thicken up the sauce, and it's a very brothy dish. You could eat this with a spoon. And I do think you need some kind of starch to go with it. I forgot the most important part. At the very end, let's say you added the meatballs, you cooked them for 10 minutes, add your beans, stir them through, and then you add a nice big bunch of spinach and a nice amount of mint. I used about a half a cup of chopped mint, fresh mint. And Leah's recipe calls for 5 ounces of baby spinach. I looked in the supermarket, and indeed, those spinach boxes, those boxes of spinach are all 5 ounces. But I wanted to buy the leaf spinach still on its stems. But even after I cut off the stems, the tender stems, it was about 5 ounces. I don't think you have to be too exact with this. And then you stir that in at the last minute. It is, you know, if you reheat it, it turns out to be mucky. But if you make it up to the point of adding the beans and then reheat it later and add the spinach and mint at the very last minute, and you only need like 2 minutes of simmering for the spinach to be totally wilted and beautiful, it's a really attractive dish. And Leah served this, and in fact, in the photograph in her book, Jewish Cooking, she served it with harissa, which is the North African, we always think of it as Moroccan, but it's more Maghreb, the northwest corner of Africa. It's their hot sauce. You can buy it in a jar, even in the supermarket these days. It's not an unusual, and you can make your own, but why bother when you can buy good stuff in a jar? I mean, there is some stuff that I make myself. Speaking of which, I made a mango chutney some months ago because I realized that when you get mango chutney from an Indian restaurant, and we're talking about, I live in Brooklyn, they deliver. It's really just a little container of syrup. There's no fruit in it at all. It has no mango character at all. And now that you can buy already cut up mango in any supermarket, which is the only hard part about making mango chutney, I do make mango chutney, but you can buy it. I guess you can buy good stuff in a jar, but mine has lasted months, because how much mango chutney do you use? Although I'm thinking about this recipe that I made before I knew much about cooking. I guess this dates back to the 50s, where you took some Philadelphia cream cheese. Do you remember this, Marshall?
Yes.
You're old enough.
I do.
You know, this was a big deal. Cream cheese and mango chutney mashed together. It's actually a pretty good spread, you know, with drinks.
My grandmother used to do that with cherries, and she used to do it with peaches as well.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I wish I'd known your grandma. I'm sure I'd learn a lot from her. So that recipe, the meatballs, is a bit of a project. I mean, even just measuring out all those spices takes some time. But here's one, also North African, or Middle Eastern, I would say, more than North African, is shawarma. Now, I don't know if up in Sharon there are any places that have shawarma, but shawarma seems to have won the world. Even in Salerno, there's a shawarma stand right in the middle of the city. So shawarma is usually made on a vertical spit. It could be lamb shawarma, chicken shawarma, turkey shawarma, I've seen. And it's layers of meat with seasoning cooked on a vertical spit.
Well, the Greek restaurants...
These days, a gas fire. What?
The Greek restaurants do that to make their gyros and stuff.
Gyro. Shawarma is almost... It's the same thing with different seasoning. But Leah Koenig, author of the Jewish Cookbook, has a recipe for shawarma that you make at home. Now, as she points out, it's not the same, but I made it, and it was very delicious, and it was so easy. You just take boneless, skinless chicken thighs and put a rub on them of cumin, 2 teaspoons of cumin, 2 teaspoons of paprika, sweet paprika, 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of turmeric, 1/2 teaspoon. Well, she has garlic powder, but I didn't use garlic powder. I told you I'm not up to that yet. I smashed 1 clove of garlic really into smithereens and mixed it in with the spices. And then smoked paprika. You can leave that out if you want, 1/4 teaspoon. It gives it a little smoky flavor, though. And 1/2 teaspoon of salt and 1/4 teaspoon of pepper. And you just mix all those spices together and you put the chicken thighs in a plastic bag and rub in the spices and let it sit there for at least an hour. Mine stayed, I think, an hour and a half, not much more. And then you just put the meat on a greased baking sheet at 425. Actually, I did not grease my baking sheet, and it was okay because the chicken renders quite a bit of fat. I mean, they're thighs after all. So, but if you want to be sure, nothing sticks. And I baked it on an aluminum tin foil bed because I didn't want to have to clean the baking sheet so much. Anyway, before you put it on the in the oven, mix in with the chicken a sliced large onion, and make sure that the onion gets seasoning on it as well, the chicken seasoning. Lay that all out on your baking sheet. Takes about a half an hour at 425 degrees. You could cook it a little longer if you want. And then, but you don't really need to, because what Leah does, and this is so clever, is she, after the chicken's all done, and you probably could do it ahead, slice the chicken and put it in a skillet with a little oil and cook it, because the bottom of the chicken is not going to be brown. The top will be brown, but you want to give that little crispy edge that shawarma cooked on a vertical spit has. And that's it. And you can eat that with chopped salad in a sandwich, not in a sandwich. I made a tahini dressing, which drizzled on it was terrific. If this wasn't Jewish, you might put a yogurt dressing on top, but of course you're not allowed to mix meat and dairy, so forget the yogurt if you're kosher. And this is a kosher book. By the way, it's a pretty book, too. I mean, it's got lots of color photographs. And I must say, my treasure of the year, I'm not going to probably buy many other cookbooks. For one thing, there's so many things in here that I want to make. It's going to keep me busy for a while. Oh, I also made red cabbage. You know, all winter, I don't know what got into me, but all winter I was craving braised red cabbage. Not a thing you could just go to any restaurant and get. So I had to make it myself. So I keep eyeing the red cabbage, and then I don't know what happens. But Leah made it in her book, and it inspired me, and finally I did it, and it's sensational. I mean, it's nothing unusual. You just put the cabbage in a pot with a sautéed onion and a cut-up apple and a tiny bit of sugar, really tiny bit, salt and pepper, and you let it steam and cook and toss it around every 10 minutes or so. Mine took over an hour, almost an hour and a half, until it became totally soft and silky and wilted. And then you add apple cider vinegar. I mean, you could use another vinegar, but apple cider vinegar is the right one. We've got an apple in there, too. And the apple cider vinegar, I thought 3 tablespoons was going to be enough, even though Leah's recipe called for 4 tablespoons or a quarter of a cup. But in the end, I added a little extra vinegar. So she was right on about that as well. Anyway, St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
A moment for corned beef hash, more than the corned beef itself.
You're right.
I'm going to go out today. I am going to go to the supermarket. The supermarkets are open. All restaurants are closed. All bars are closed. I'm noticing I can see some traffic from my kitchen window, and it's very light today. I don't know what's going to go on. But fortunately, I live on Prospect Park, so I can go take a walk on the deserted street around it. In the park itself, this is funny. Yesterday, the park itself was mobbed because I think everybody felt that that was a safe place to be. But I don't know. If you're, you know, if it feels like the subway at rush hour, then how safe is it? It was really, really crowded. I stayed away from the park. But I am going to go buy a corned beef because my supermarket the other day had them piled high. Unless after toilet paper, people went out and bought corned beef.
I don't know.
There should still be some there. And this is the thing. It's very hard, during the regular year, it's very, very hard to find the top second cut piece. It's always the flat cut, or what they call first cut, which I think is second good. So I'm always looking for that point top. And it's hard to find, except it's St. Patrick's Day, they actually had, in my market, they actually had more of those than they had the other, and they had 2 different brands. I noticed one brand came with pickling spices, a packet of spices, and the other one didn't. So if you get a corned beef that doesn't have a packet of pickling spices. I would take, for a 3 to 4 pound corned beef, I would take at least a rounded tablespoon of pickling spices and put it in the water. And by the way, corned beef always takes a lot longer to cook than you think it should. Yeah. At the slow simmer it should be at, you don't want to, you're going to have to cook it an hour per pound. The 4 pounds, which by the way shrinks up to nothing. So 4 pounds of corned beef is not all that much. I don't like to cook, if I'm making corned beef and cabbage and with vegetables, you know, like maybe carrots or parsnips, I don't like to cook them along with the corned beef. I like to cook the corned beef until it's tender and then take some of the corned beef cooking water and cook the vegetables in that in a separate pot. This way you can get the vegetables to be exactly where you want them to be. I read a lot of recipes that have you cook the, like say a 4 pound corned beef, cook it for 3 hours and then add the carrots and the cabbage, add the cabbage after for another half hour and then add the carrots for another half hour. So it does end up being 4 hours for the meat. But I think it's sort of easier to just let the, and the, how do you know corned beef is done? You take your two-pronged fork, and if it goes in easily, it's done. Truthfully, I don't want to eat that so much as I want to eat the leftovers, which I'll dice up and fry with some potatoes and onions, and maybe if I have a green pepper in the house, I'll use that, or a red pepper, sweet pepper. And I like to cook the potatoes first, dice them and boil them until they're almost but not completely tender, and put them in the pan with already sautéed chopped onion, and then cook them for a while with the onion, and then finally add the meat. And if you're going to do pepper, then you have to do it with the onion, diced also. But the meat should be very, very tender, and put in some of the meat fast. Don't be shy. But what I like to cook the potatoes first is I don't like it when the potatoes stay firm in cubes. I really do want some of them to fall apart and become sort of mashed with the meat and holds it all together. And this way, if you want to make a brown side, which I do like, a crusty side, you'll be able to do it.
All right.
Yep. Listen, I grew up on, one of the only things my father ever cooked was a broadcast corned beef hash. Broadcast corned beef hash. No, I'm hitting the wrong notes. But it's after Mazursky's pictures at an exhibition. They used to use that in the commercials. And my father used to sing it. And then he would announce that that's what he was doing. He would open a can of corned beef hash and smush it down into a pot until it got nice and crusty.
Canned corned beef hash, I'm sorry.
Well, I haven't had it in many years, but who knows?
I know, who knows?
I don't know. It could be good.
I think, for me,
it's going to be nostalgic.
In a pinch.
So you can't go by me if it's good or not.
In a pinch. In a pinch, it's, I guess. So you can,
well, you know, I've recently cooked Spam a few times just to fool around. I'm now off of Spam. No more Spam.
I like Spam because of Monty Python. But that's,
well, I got into it because a Chinese woman told me that if I wanted to have real, authentic Chinese-American fried rice, I had to use Spam as my protein. You know what? I'll drive 15 minutes to a Chinese roast shop.
Just get it. That's
and buy
right.
Char siu for my fried rice. It's okay.
All right. Well, I want you to be safe.
All right. Everybody stay safe. I'm assuming that people are staying in.
Yeah. For the most case, yes, they are.
Yeah, well, we're well stocked with food, so.
You know, my life is.
I do ache to go out and be served. I guess you could go to a drive-thru at a fast food place.
And a lot of restaurants are offering now curbside pickup and delivery here up here. That's what.
Yeah, well,
doing.
Here everything's closed.
Yeah.
The city has closed all restaurants and bars.
Yeah, but they are allowing delivery.
I don't know about that.
Oh, really?
And I don't know if anybody wants to open just for the deliveries. Yeah. Now, the other day, I actually ate in a piece of pizza that I never had before in the neighborhood, a slice, and it was so good. I said to her, "Do you deliver?" The woman behind the counter, and she said, "Yes, but not." And she said, "Where do you live?" And I told her. And she said, "Well, it's a little too far." because it was a few blocks out of their range. But then she said, but Grub Street is now delivering for free.
Yeah.
So the delivery services are thriving, I would think.
Absolutely.
But I walked by the restaurant around the corner from me yesterday. It's a sort of fancy place, and you need a reservation for brunch on Sunday normally, and it was so empty I thought it was closed until a waitress came out to tell me that they were not closed, but I didn't go in for other reasons. I'm something called empty restaurant syndrome I didn't want to deal with. But anyway, they're closed. They're everybody's going to be closed. I don't think they're going to be. It doesn't pay, you know. It costs some money to turn the lights on.
Yeah, and costs
and the gas on. Yeah. Da 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 da. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see how long this lasts.
All right. Well, Arthur, stay safe.
All right. Well, so everybody, take care. Wash your hands or do dishes.
All right. I'll speak to you next week.
Bye.
Take care, Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, here on Robin Hood Radio.